6. A Trusted Associate. Modo sighed as the gate to Bedlam closed behind him. That it was still light out was surprising. It felt as though several hours had passed inside the hospital, and he hadn't learned anything from the meeting with Alexander King. The man was disturbing. Modo had never before been nose to nose with someone who had lost his faculties. Perhaps most disturbing of all was the man's face, the self-inflicted scratches, the blood. Could it be he hated his appearance? Modo himself had moments when he wanted to tear his own face off. Would it one day drive him as mad as that poor fellow? Concentrate. Why were you sent here? He sifted through every detail of their conversation and couldn't find a single clue as to why he'd been given this mission. Smartly dressed ladies and gentlemen out for a walk saw him leaving Bedlam and gave him the once-over, then observed the walls of the madhouse with curiosity and perhaps a little fear. No doubt they wondered what was inside. Insanity! He wanted to shout at them. Insanity and violinists and painters! That's what I saw! You're a doctor, he reminded himself, and you are an agent. Control yourself. He hadn't been told where to go after the interview, so he decided to return to Safe House. He was about to raise his hand for a cab when he noticed a black carriage at the edge of Lambeth Road. The wide-shouldered driver in a greatcoat sat staring ahead with his back straight, suggesting a military background. The carriage door swung open. Modo knew who would be inside even before Mr. Socrates leaned out and motioned him over. Modo removed his hat, walked to the carriage and climbed in, closing the door behind him. He sat down on the red velvet bench across from his master. Mr. Socrates was wearing a black dress coat with a fur collar, opened to reveal his blue jacket, his white vest, and the gold chain of his watch. His top hat sat beside him like a companion. Modo would have considered Mr. Socrates an old man with his white, closely cropped hair and wrinkled face, but his eyes held a wellspring of energy and strength that would have intimidated anyone half his age. Mr. Socrates tapped his walking stick on the ceiling of the carriage, and they began to roll down the street. He appraised Modo for several moments and nodded to himself as though a question had been answered, then leaned forward on his stick. So, what did you discover about the illustrious Alexander King? He is quite mad. One would expect so, since he is housed in Bedlam. Did you ascertain anything specific from meeting him? Details about his past, perhaps? His occupation? Modo leaned on his walking stick, until he realized he was unintentionally mimicking Mr. Socrates. Well, he has rough hands, so that suggests that he has done some labor. His diction isn't of the lower classes, though. He is partially tanned, so he has spent a good deal of his time outside. I would guess that he is a naturalist or an engineer. Mr. Socrates nodded. Good observations, though the last is incorrect. King is an explorer, a second-class one, to be sure, but we keep tabs on all the explorers, even the unsuccessful ones. His accent was Canadian, Modo added. Yes, he's from Vancouver. Ah, another morsel from my master, Modo thought dryly. You seem to know quite a bit about him. Why didn't you give me this information before the interview? I wanted an unprejudiced view, so to speak. I have now told you most everything I know about our mutual friend. The only other fact is that he was recently brought back to London from Australia by our government. Why? He's suspected in a death or two. Whose deaths? A fellow adventurer from Germany. And the death of Dr. Livingstone. But Livingstone died of natural causes. According to the papers, yes. And that's the story the government will always give to the public. But the evening he died, he wrote in his diary, a diary that's been kept a secret, that he was about to dine with Mr. King. The same Mr. King who was reported to have been climbing with Josef Stimmler a few weeks earlier on Mount Kilimanjaro. Stimmler fell to his death on that climb. Odd to have two explorers die within such a short period of time, and in the company of the same person. I wouldn't call this coincidence. So why did he murder them? That's what I was hoping you'd shed some light on. Alas, you haven't been successful in gathering any pertinent information.
I did my best, sir, Murdo snapped, surprised at his angry tone. Well, what did Mr. Socrates expect? He'd locked Murdo away in that mansion for months, then thrown him into an assignment expecting him to be at the top of his game. And besides, I haven't told you everything yet, sir.
When you finish your huffing and puffing, do please tell me.
There are hieroglyphics on the cell wall, written in his own blood, I believe.
Mr. Socrates nodded as though he heard these sorts of details every day. Anything else?
He recited a nonsense rhyme.
Modo paused to call up the words.
The mountain keen, the forest green, the godface burns inside. The west at your spine, the face divine. Through the doorway go, beneath the Horus stone. The face, it waits, it waits, it waits.
Well, he won't give Coleridge a run for his money, Mr. Socrates said, and chuckled. Modo smiled broadly. He loved Coleridge's poetry, and was pleased to think his master read him too. Mr. Socrates might even be old enough to have known Coleridge himself.
Mr. Socrates rubbed his chin.
His poetic rantings do sound rather mad. Most likely pointless drivel. But could it perhaps be a riddle?
So I was sent to discover pointless drivel, Modo thought. I do wonder, sir, why I had to sneak in. Why didn't you just pull a few strings and make an appointment yourself?
Sometimes it's best not to tip your hand, Modo. Even to members of one's own government. A formal request would have resulted in questions, and I would have had to respond, which likely would have involved reams of paperwork. An undocumented visit solves that. The carriage rattled along. Modo wanted to ask Mr. Socrates many things, including, why haven't I been given any assignments for over 2 months? But he took a deep breath. It wasn't his place to question. He was here to follow orders. They crossed the familiar iron and granite Westminster Bridge, which was clogged with traffic. The sight of the Houses of Parliament made Modo feel a little nauseated. Would he ever be able to view them again without remembering the monstrous creation the Clockwork Guild had built to attack the government? He and Octavia had joined forces against it. If not for Octavia, he would have drowned in the Thames. Twice now she had saved his life, and she would hold that fact over his head until the day he died. Unless, of course, he could find a way to save her life in return. As the carriage ploughed through the traffic, Modo turned his attention to Westminster Abbey, next to the Houses of Parliament. A majestic sight, the seat of civilization, of the very empire. That was what the Permanent Association was fighting to preserve. Mr. Socrates was looking at the abbey, too.
They buried Livingstone today, he offered. I'll miss the old man.
You knew Dr. Livingstone?
Modo asked.
Yes, he had a great mind, though he was a little too much of a missionary for my taste. I supported his appointment as a consul for the east coast of Africa by the Royal Geographical Society. He was a good friend.
Why didn't you attend the funeral?
The question had slipped out.
I'm sorry, sir. Was that too personal?
I'm not one for long goodbyes, Modo. When I depart this world, just set me on a burning boat and push me out to sea. The Norsemen knew how to do funerals.
Modo pictured Mr. Socrates in an icy grave, and a sharp pain touched his heart. What would become of him when his master died?
And did you have a productive visit with Mrs. Finchley? Mr. Socrates asked, after they had rumbled a few more blocks.
I did, sir.
It wasn't a lot of time. But I hope she was able to sharpen your acting chops.
She was, sir. Thank you for letting me see her again.
He stared at the top of his cane. After 13 years spent raising Modo, Mrs. Finchley had been ripped out of his life by Mr. Socrates. Admittedly, it had toughened Modo, but the fact that he hadn't been allowed to see his beloved Mrs. Finchley in such a long time made him burn with outrage.
Mr. Socrates drummed his fingers on top of his hat. Don't thank me for that. I don't appreciate sentimentality in my agents. If I had known you were becoming so attached, I wouldn't have allowed you to work with her again.
Yes, Mr. Socrates,
Modo said.
It took all his acting skills to hide his resentment.
When the carriage pulled up to the front of Victor House, they climbed out and Mr. Socrates set a quick pace through the iron gates and across the yard. Modo, a half step behind, tapped the shield on the statue of Mars that guarded the property. He believed it would bring him good luck, plus he felt daring in showing superstition in Mr. Socrates' presence. The door to the house opened, and Tharper nodded to them. He was dressed in tan trousers, a tan kurta that hung partway down his thigh, and a white turban. Modo nearly rubbed his hands with glee. He finally had the chance to put one over on his martial arts trainer. Tharper had not seen Modo in his latest face.
"Good afternoon, Mr. Socrates," Tharper said, pausing to look directly at Modo. "And good afternoon to you, young Zab."
"How did you know it was me?"
Modo squeaked.
"You have a certain smell," Tharper answered. "And I knew you would be travelling with Mr. Socrates."
"Of course," Modo cursed his short-sighted thinking.
"Always examine the most obvious answer first, Modo,"
Mr. Socrates said, with the same tone he used to impart any lesson. "Any news, Tharper?"
"Yes. News in the form of Miss Milkweed. She is waiting in the study."
He stepped aside so they could enter, then closed the heavy door behind them.
Octavia!
Modo was glad for his extra acting lessons. He pretended he hadn't noticed her name and tried to ignore his rapid heartbeat. As he followed Mr. Socrates into the study, he checked his buttons and made certain his cravat was straight. He adjusted the chain of his watch so that it hung from his pocket in a perfect U.
"Ah, Miss Milkweed, I see you've made yourself at home," Mr. Socrates said.
Octavia was wearing a black dress and seated in a red velvet chair, a book in her hand. It looked as though the bottom portion of her dress had been torn. Her ankles and the lower half of her calves were visible, and her feet were buried in a dark fur rug. Leather shoes rested next to the chair. A teacup sat on the small table beside her. It had been 4 months since Modo laid eyes on her. All he could do was try not to stare at her legs.
"Yes, it's good to see you, sir," Octavia said.
"Will you introduce me to your companion?"
Modo laughed to himself.
"Of course," Mr. Socrates answered. "This is Dr. Jonathan Reeve. He's in the employ of our association."
"At your service," Modo said, and bowed with exaggerated courtesy. "Oh, a doctor,"
Octavia exclaimed, brushing a loose curl from her eyes.
"It's an absolute pleasure to meet you."
The way she spoke took Modo aback. Was she flirting with him? Did she flirt like this with all men? How many doctors did she know, anyway?
"I'm pleased to be at your service," Modo said. "You're repeating yourself," she said smartly, and gave him a wink. A wink!
Modo nearly snapped his walking stick in two.
She was flirting.
"Come, sit at the table, Octavia," Mr. Socrates said. "We have much to discuss. And do cover up your legs and put your shoes on. You may not be a real lady, but that's no excuse for such vulgarity."
"Ah, but me feet ache so, Mr. Socrates. Perhaps the doctor could soothe them with some rubbing lotion."
Modo swallowed as he pulled out a chair at the table. He didn't dare look at her. Then it dawned on him why Mr. Socrates hadn't revealed Modo's true identity. This was another test of his acting abilities. Well, Modo would show him, and her. Octavia, after making a show of putting on her shoes, wrapping a blanket around her legs and muttering under her breath, brought her cup of tea to the table.
"Is the good doctor to be part of our meeting?"
She sat down with them.
"You may speak freely in front of Dr. Reeve," Mr. Socrates said. "He is a trusted associate and an integral part of our association."
Was Mr. Socrates actually complimenting him now?
The permanent association included some of the most powerful people in all of Britannia. Or was the compliment just part of the ruse?
"I would appreciate your report, Miss Milkweed," Mr. Socrates said.
"First off," she said, "sir, in the future, could you indicate in your instructions that my life may be at risk?"
"But that should be presumed. Stop delaying and tell us what you found."
Well, Dr. Livingstone is still dead.
Octavia scratched the back of her neck. One would expect such, since he has been dead for nearly a year, not to mention the fact that he was missing his heart.
He was? Modo said, imagining the gruesome dissection.
Ah, didn't you read that in the papers, Dr. Reeve? When he died in Africa, the tribe he'd been staying with at first refused to give up his body. After some persuasion, his two servants carried it in a coffin for 9 months to a port. The authorities there opened the coffin to discover that his heart had been cut out by his tribe. A note had been tucked under his arm. It said, "You can have his body, but his heart belongs in Africa." Apparently, they buried his heart under a mvula tree.
How savage, Octavia said.
Mr. Socrates shrugged. I prefer to think of it as noble. Livingstone himself would have approved, I am sure. Besides, we so-called civilized people have even more savage rituals. Have you ever seen a man hanged? It's only education and upbringing that differentiate them from us. And a bit of English blood. He laughed. Enough of that. What did you discover, Octavia?
Well, she said, I waited until the mourners were gone, and then a man with an Australian accent approached me. He gave me a document.
She slid the envelope across to Mr. Socrates.
Oh, and then he died.
She threw an envelope stuffed with cash on the table.
So I retrieved his payment.
Mr. Socrates pocketed the envelope. Good work. Please explain his manner of death.
Three mechanical birds attacked him.
Mechanical birds? Murdo exclaimed. But that sounds like the Clockwork Guild.
Ah, you know of the guild, she said. You really must be a trusted member of the association. These birds seem to have poison on their beaks, or their talons, perhaps, for the Australian died immediately after having been scratched by one, even though his wounds weren't deep.
She scratched her neck again.
It takes some skill to procure and administer contact poison, Mr. Socrates observed. Please continue. Well, a man was observing the attack from the balcony. He was waving his arms and seemed to be controlling the birds. I won't bore you with details about how I escaped and left my mechanical feathered friends behind. I changed cabs twice to be certain no one followed me.
Good work, Modo said, now completely out of character. Octavia gave him an odd look.
There's something familiar about you, Dr. Reeve. Is there any chance we've met before?
I don't believe so.
But we have. I'm growing more certain of it. I've heard your voice before. And there's something about your eyes.
I have never met you, Miss Milkweed, he said, trying to deepen his voice.
Mr. Socrates waved his hand.
The charade is over, Murdo. Obviously your acting needs more work. My boy, you must be a consummate actor, especially around people who know you.
Modo?
Octavia glared at him.
So, this is another of your faces. And it was all a lark on Miss Milkweed, was it?
Not a lark, Modo said, stunned. This was not at all how he'd pictured their reunion.
What was it then, clever pants? She replied.
It wasn't anything. It wasn't enough, Mr. Socrates pronounced. It was only a minor test for both of you.
Well, I...
Octavia lifted her hand, and Modo wondered if she was going to throw something at him, but instead she scratched her neck again.
This horrid itch, she said,
then, wide-eyed, pulled something out of her hair. Opening her fist, she looked at her palm and let out a little shriek as she dropped something on the table. A metal spider, an inch wide, lay there on its back, its silver legs kicking at the air. It ticked like a watch.
What the deuce is that? She exclaimed.
Mr. Socrates picked up a butter knife from the table and poked at the thing. It closed its legs tightly around the knife and began to climb.
A curious device. Incredibly fine clockwork.
He slowly turned the knife, then dropped one of his cufflinks onto the table. He bumped the spider close to it and the cufflink moved slightly.
It's magnetic. Powerfully so for something that size. Any idea how you came to get it?
I haven't the faintest idea, she replied.
Tharpa found a tin in a desk drawer and Mr. Socrates placed the spider inside and closed the lid. "I'll have it examined. And, Octavia, we'll have to have a real doctor examine your neck. Thank you, Tharpa." He handed the tin to Tharpa, who then left the room. "The spider is troublesome. One can only guess at its purpose. Fortunately, it wasn't covered with contact poison, or you'd be dead right now."
"Well, that's a comfort," Octavia said.
She crossed her arms.
"It might be a different kind of poison," Modo suggested. "Something with a delayed action." "You sound as though you wish it were so," Octavia said.
"No, I just... You should see a doctor."
Mr. Socrates shrugged.
"Once we're done with this meeting, she'll be attended to. But here's what's important now."
He opened the envelope and unfolded the map, holding it so only he could see. Modo stared at the back of it to avoid looking at Octavia, who he knew was still glaring at him. He could see a dim outline, but couldn't tell what area of the world the map represented.
"Well, that settles it," Mr. Socrates said finally. "Prepare yourselves for another mission. We are going to Australia."